Thank you so much for joining me. This is Tracy Rowe with Spiritual Not Religious, and today I'll be interviewing Kate Dalrymple about pranayama yoga and para yoga. She has been a practitioner and teacher of yoga for many years, and even though she's herself not very old, but she began practicing yoga right out of high school and has continued very consistently, discovering through different forms of yoga. And currently pranayama and para yoga are the forms that she's invested the most in. And so she's going to talk today about breath work and the different styles of practice, but also how yoga has made it possible for her to cope with stress and anxiety and depression, and also how the philosophy of yoga has been really meaningful to her in overcoming the difficulties associated with injuries. She began practice more just as a supplement to her other more active sports, just to basically get a good stretch and basically as a way to solve the problems caused by some more extreme sports. And then over time invested more into the spiritual aspects of a yoga practice, and currently sees it as a really meaningful way to bring more joy and loving kindness and awareness into the world. And her intention and her striving in her practice is to inspire all to live compassionately with their bodies, minds, and spirits. So I'm going to listen to a quick ad, and then we'll be back with Kate Dalrymple. So, Katie, thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to talk to you today about your yoga practice for sure, but just what's been going on with you in all of your personal evolution. So, your bio, you say that in 2011, you discovered yoga, and I'd really like to hear about what that discovery process was like, what was going on that led you there.
Yes, thinking back, well, thank you for having me. Very Yay. Excited to be here. Always good to see your face.
Yay. Thank you.
2011, yeah, what a year. It was the year that I graduated high school and that I was going to college, and so it was, and I went away for college, and it was before I really understood what anxiety was, what I understood what depression was, and you know, those are labels, like that's what we can call certain experiences. But that was really before I kind of understood that the way that I was functioning in the world wasn't going to work. It wasn't going to be, it shouldn't be my full-time gig for the rest of my life, because I didn't have energy to do much. And so when it really all came to a head when I went away to school and all of these changes happened, as it does for, I think, a lot of people when you move away from home for the first time, no matter when that is. And I just went to a college. I was at the gym a lot. I was doing a lot with my physical body, I think, to get through some things going on in my spiritual and mental body, that so that probably was, you know, that's how I was dealing. But then I went to a yoga class just at the rec center, and I initially went because I was rock climbing a lot and I was hurting myself, and so I realized, you know, I gotta go stretch this out, I gotta go fix this. But then I went to the yoga class and I was like, oh, this is a lot more than just stretching. And it was one of the first times in a while that I felt like some of the voices in my brain were quieter, that they were not saying as many mean things to me, that I felt a little bit more kind of in control of my own body and space. So I was like, oh, okay. So then I just tried to go to as many classes as I could, and that's really about it. It came in at a moment where I had no idea what I was doing. I was I don't know if I'm allowed to say naughty words on your podcast, but
oh yeah, there can be naughty words.
It was a shit show. Yeah, okay. It was a dumpster fire. I was a dumpster fire. I was a shit show. I had bad relationships with people around me. Like I was just not in a good place. But then I found this place where I could literally breathe and felt like I was getting oxygen. So yeah, it just really kind of went from there. I knew that it was important to me.
So do you know what style of yoga that first rec center experience was?
It was just a vinyasa yoga class. So it's very much focused on movement and tying breath to movement. And at the time, that was really speaking to me because it was difficult physically for me to do it. And so I was really into that because I played competitive sports, and then I was climbing all the time and I was running. And so I was like, yeah, I'm going to really push myself. But it was really that element of bringing the breath and movement together that gave me that sense of peace that I had been looking for, I guess.
Yeah. So vinyasa, is that how?
Yeah. So vinyasa, it's a more physical style. Typically, there's a lot of poses. There's a lot of movement. There's a little bit less downtime. I mean, at the end, you still have a traditional shavasana where you lay and rest. But most of the class is moving. And at that time, that's really all I could do. That's what I could take. If I had started in a restorative class where you, for instance, only do 4 or 5 poses over an hour and you're really just laying there. Well, that's how some at the time I would have interpreted it. What are you doing? You're just laying there. I don't think that I would have the same relationship with yoga. At that time, I really needed something that was physical and that could connect me in that way.
Right, right. It had to seem relevant.
Yeah.
Whereas based on what your previous physicality had been, right?
Yes.
That makes sense. So then, what was your evolution along the path to the different styles? And keep in mind that some folks who are listening might know a ton about yoga, and some, yeah, all these words might be brand new, and they're mostly new to me. Like I can Google things, but I know a Google level of lots of things.
Yes, exactly.
but so go ahead. And if you say stuff that I don't know about.
Yes. Okay, please. Because sometimes I do it, I don't even realize that I'm doing it.
So. I totally get that.
So yeah, I really felt the need to teach. It was kind of an inner voice that was saying, you know, this is something that's helped you. I was also getting some other things in my life together. I was a little bit less of a dumpster fire. And so in about 2015 is when I graduated college. And that's when I started seriously thinking about, you know, do I want to be a teacher? What is that going to look like? What kind of program do I want to go into? Because right now the landscape of yoga teachers is very diverse. And in some ways that's fantastic. And in other ways that's not so fantastic. So
how come?
I think that yoga is a 4,000 year old practice. It's how some people relate spiritually, and it's how some people go and get better abs. And so there's a big spectrum there. And I definitely knew that I wanted to honor the lineage of yoga. I wanted to honor all of the teachers that had come before me. And so I wanted to make sure that I was entering into a practice and a program that would honor that, instead of just thinking about, you know, what's the best way to get lean legs and butt, which isn't my style. And I understand that some people practice that, but that's just not me. I was very much more drawn towards this kind of lineage of really honoring that. So
can I ask a question about that? So what was the transition for you between what really would have been more like abs and butts, abs and butts in the beginning, right? When you were first saying, I just need to, you know, I've got a cramp and you'd stretch that.
Yeah.
So I can get back, you know, into my extreme sports.
Yeah.
right?
It's true. Yeah.
Right. What was the evolution between that to where you were like, nope, I'm honoring a lineage. I want to have a sacredness about this.
Yeah. So there was so much else going on in my life that I got a different relationship with my body. I started to learn more, and I've always been a pretty high achieving individual. I've always been a pretty, like, I liked school. I liked learning things, and college was for me a great time where I found the things that I was passionate about. I started studying environmental studies. I started studying outdoor leadership. And so I started to see, especially in environmental studies, myself as part of this bigger system, just in general. In the world, I started to understand, and this happens, I think, to most people in their late teens, you start to think less maybe about like the you of yourself, the I, the me, and you start to think about, oh, wait, there's other people around me. This is great. Like, I don't just have to think about myself all the time. I need to be thinking about other people. Oh, that's what an interesting concept. So I think it really put it into this context for me that I wasn't going to do myself the best service if I stayed going along this line of just the physicality of it. I was really seeing how I was progressing in my life in other ways, and how it was really this deeper core of yoga that I was drawn to. The physicality is what kind of was what spoke to me in the beginning, but what really tied it through was the breath, was working on, you know, my own balance inside my body. So yeah.
Wow. Okay. That's really cool. So then, so I'm gonna, let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, I'd like to hear about a little bit, well, actually I hope a lot about the practices and the systems that you ended up connecting with the most. Okay. Be back in a sec. Okay, we're back with Katie Dalrymple, and Katie's been talking about her journey in that has included a long-time practice of yoga. And so, Katie, so tell me more about the practices that you ended up really connecting with and how you found them.
Yeah, absolutely. So I ended up attending a teacher training that was actually at Salt Lake Community College. So I was really excited to, that program just resonated the most with me. And I was glad that it wasn't really associated with one studio because I got exposure to teachers from all over the Salt Lake Valley. So really there, I got to hear from people with very diverse yoga backgrounds and who were teaching everything from really breath centric or more, or some meditative classes to teachers that were really into, you know, a more physical practice. And so that's really where I got introduced to pranayama as a part of yoga. It's breath work. And so that's really where I learned a lot more about that. I started incorporating that into my personal practice. That really resonated. I mean, I was already doing it, but this was where I got some more foundational knowledge about how to practice and how to teach others. And it all informed how I was able to practice myself. And then the other kind of style that really resonated with me was para-yoga, which is much more functional movement focused, much more focusing on the connection between movement and breath. So super fun practice and a little bit slower sometimes than I think people are expecting, but very, very beneficial. And some people are like, they watch before they practice or they're in the class for the first time and they think, oh, I'm not going to get a workout from this. And then by the end, they're sore. Mm-hmm. Or the next day, they're sore and they're like, how did that even happen? And I think that's because the focus is really on the breath and the movement together. So you're focusing less on kind of holding poses for a long time, or it's a lot of dynamic movement. It's, yeah.
So what do you mean by dynamic movement? Mm.
Yes. So there are some practices that are very static. So if anyone's been to a hot yoga class or a Bikram yoga class, there's a certain sequence you go through and you get into the pose and you hold it. And then you get out of it. You get into the next pose, you hold it, you get out of it. Mm-hmm. And this para yoga, what I loved about it was it was much more dynamic in that the transitions were important from one to the next. Instead of holding a pose, you would use the breath to move your body in the pose, but maybe between kind of two expressions of the pose. So you may be going from arms kind of in a cactus or a goalpost to down by your side. And you're also, you know, maybe bending legs. And it was just a lot more engaging. And that's the kind of practice that resonates with me. And that's what I like to teach more, because I think it's more intentional. Mm-hmm. But that's just me. I don't know. Other people do all kinds of yoga.
Yeah.
That's for them.
Sure. No, and even the people who are just looking for, you know, some butt and ab action.
Yeah.
Right? I think it's it can meet you where you're at.
Yeah.
Which I think any kind of a good philosophical or any kind of a program of any sort, if it can meet you where you're at, then that is a part of its validity.
Yes.
What are the benefits, do you think, of breath work? I'll be honest, breath work often, in the context of yoga, has often been really challenging mm-hmm. for me. Like annoying even. I get real frustrated with myself
yeah.
with it. It feels like sometimes it can feel like rubbing my stomach and patting my head kind of a thing. And
yeah.
I get frustrated.
Oh yeah.
Which, you know, is its own thing to work through frustration. But how would you describe did you have any difficulty or was breath work just like, bam, I know how to do that?
No, it wasn't like I walked in and it was like, I'm the expert. There's definitely sometimes, especially early on in teacher training, where I would go weekly to class and I would not want to go. I'd be like, oh my God, this is going to suck. Because it can feel really foreign. It can feel really like I'm asking my body to do something that is just different than the habitual breathing that I've been doing before. And mm-hmm. we've been breathing, every single person has been breathing since they were born. Mm-hmm. And so every single time you breathe, that's another, you're setting that habit, you're putting that in motion, which is great, right? We want to be able to breathe without thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
That I am very grateful for. Otherwise, you know, sleeping
exactly.
would be hard.
Sleeping would be harder.
Like all of that would be
yeah,
difficult.
You're right. That's a good
yeah.
point.
Mm-hmm. But so there was definitely a learning curve and it felt kind of steep at first.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I think it wasn't just the working through the frustration, but it took practice to get my body to feel like this was also a habit. This was also something that was just as valid as my regular breath pattern. So it was frustrating sometimes, but I was also feeling that the more that I intentionally breathed, the more that I could intentionally do other things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a really great, it's kind of the classic mindfulness tool too,
yeah.
but it definitely, I think that's a great point. It, whatever that you use to focus intentionality on, you can generalize that intentionality to other things. And breath is maybe chosen as the sort of central mindfulness practice because of the very fact that you said it, because we're always doing it.
Yeah.
And
it's like something, I mean, I've worked with students in all walks of life, kids, athletes, people with different abilities, older folks who, you know, mobility is a concern. And the one thing that we can all do together, which I think is really powerful, is breathe.
Wow. Wow. It has a lot of symbolic content.
Yeah.
Breathing does.
Yeah.
It is constant. It is the letting in and letting out of everything that's around you, and lots of, and yeah, there's lots of cool things about it for sure. So you found a particular teacher or a studio that was suited to that form?
Yeah, I did. I had my teacher coming out of teacher training that I still talk to. Her name is Mary Kane. She's absolutely fantastic. If you're ever in Salt Lake, you should go take a class from Mary. She just, her energy really resonated with my energy, and I just really honored the way that she came to her teaching mat all the time with a spirit of giving and a spirit of honoring all of her teachers before her. She would always say, if you're a good teacher, then you're letting your teachers teach through you. And that is a very yoga thing.
Sure.
But I think it was also something that she lived very authentically. And so it was something that I really wanted to kind of bring into my teaching style as well. It's really about taking everything that you've learned and just being a conduit, really, for those things. Because teaching it's not really about you standing in front of the room saying, okay, now do this, now do that. It's really about bringing an energy, bringing yourself to a space where you can help others. And it's not you doing it, really. It's something else doing it through you.
Yeah, yeah. I think that all the real stuff is that.
Yeah, absolutely.
All the real stuff is something coming through that we're a conduit for. And when you talk about, you know, your teachers letting your teachers teach through you, well, then in that sense, that's everybody's teachers all the way back, right?
Yeah.
The accumulation of all of that wisdom coming through all of, and from whence all,
from when that all things came
as well. Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah, it was, like I talked about earlier, I really wanted to honor the lineage. And so she was an obvious, like I loved learning from her. And it was hard moving here it was one of those things that I moved back from Salt Lake to Boise. And so it was hard. She was one of my cons. I made a pro con list. So she was one of the cons, but just because she's not here.
Yeah.
I asked her if she would come with me, but she said no.
Oh, really? Did you ask super nicely?
I did.
Really? Did you provide incentives?
I think I did bring over some wine.
And there will might have been cookies. I always say, start with the cookie bouquet.
Yeah.
And that is sometimes all you need to do. But,
you know, it didn't work. That's okay.
I understand that feeling. But, you know, Salt Lake is super far away or anything, but I get that. So currently, so I know that recently in the last summer, over the course of the summer, you were severely injured. In a mountain biking accident, right?
Yes.
So you, in addition to yoga, you continue to enjoy more out there, outdoorsy stuffs, and that's great. So you're a combination of all those things. So what was that like, and how has yoga been impacted by or impacted that, if at all?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was the second time, really, that I've been injured to the point where my practice couldn't continue in the way that I wanted it to. And just earlier I was saying that I'm realizing that I'm stubborn, and I'm stubborn about acknowledging that I'm stubborn. And so I think...
Would you really be stubborn if that weren't the case?
No. Exactly.
You're not half stubborn. And I like a person who commits.
Yeah, I'm really committed to this. So really committed to being stubborn, I guess. So there was... So, I was in a mountain biking accident. I went over my handlebars and I broke my collarbone and at least 3 ribs. And that was really painful. If no one's ever done that before, I can attest. It is something that if I was going to give a
collarbone, especially, you mean like
the ribs hurt more?
Oh, the ribs.
The ribs hurt a lot
and
more.
And breathe, speaking of breathing.
Well, yes. So like I mentioned earlier, the one thing that everyone can do that isn't taken away from you is your breath. And so I felt very angry because I felt like a part of my breath was taken away from me. Every breath was painful. I couldn't do anything really that I wanted to do. I laid on the couch for a couple of days and I couldn't, like, that was it. That was my human existence for that short amount of time. And it seriously felt endless. There were some times laying there where I thought, this is it. This is going to be it. And this is not even that bad. You know, people get in much worse shape than I am. So I guess I'm just a big weenie, but I was just laying there thinking, wow, I can't imagine doing this for another 30 seconds, let alone.
Like breathing or doing the yoga?
Breathing.
Just breathing.
Just breathing.
All.
This
oh
is simply
gosh.
Breathing.
And
yeah.
How long after the accident was that still going on?
I had a really hard time breathing for about a week and then things started to get better. I mean, within that week, things were getting better, but it was still kind of past that threshold of, well, this sucks.
Yeah. And it flies in the face of the old adage about doctor, it hurts when I do this. Well,
yeah.
Just don't do that.
Yeah.
Well, you can't do breathing. That one doesn't apply to, right?
Yeah.
Because it's really mystical. It's really how necessary it is.
Yeah. And I was on pain meds because I wouldn't be able to function without them. And so I couldn't drive. So I had to have my mom pick me up and take me to work. Like, I'm 25 years old. I can't even drive myself to work. Like, what a loser. I was like, this sucks. And then I couldn't even, when I got to work, I was on drugs. So I couldn't really function very well. I do not condone the use of pain meds, but like, I needed them to exist.
Yeah. When sometimes that's what you need.
Yeah.
And I'm going to just acknowledge, because there's no good way to manage it otherwise, that there is a bit of vacuuming going on here in my office building. So you will hear a little bit of that, and we're going to tolerate it because these people are kind enough to come clean this building. I'm not going to tell them not to vacuum. That just seems gross and tacky. So we will suffer through it. We will suffer through the hard, hard first world problem of listening to a vacuum cleaner. What do you think, Kate?
Yeah, it's pretty difficult.
It's like, oh, next thing you know, the elevator won't work. We don't have that. I don't really have an elevator because this is just a one floor thing. but I said that I was visiting someone in the hospital a couple weeks ago and everybody was complaining about how slow the elevator was. And I was like, oh, first world problems. And they were.
That's hilarious. The elevator at my work today was broken and I heard so many people. I have to take the stairs. I was like, what kind of problems like we have in this world?
Well, like the classic one, my son, when he likes to acknowledge the existence of you know, first world intolerance of mild inconveniences. And his famous one that I just made still makes me laugh. This was a couple of years ago. He was like, there's no room in the refrigerator for all of these leftovers. And I was like, oh. And then he goes,
first world problems. And I was like, oh my God, you're such an awake little guy.
Really?
You know?
That I feel like should be the quintessential. Whenever you talk about first world problems, now that's
there's no room in this refrigerator for all of these leftovers.
Yeah. Yeah, little woke dudes. So back to the breathing and the pain and the that was about a week, you said.
Yeah.
And you felt like, and mommy has to drive me to work, which felt awkward to you.
Yes. Yeah. I was just very resentful towards life. I was like, what the heck? I've been doing all this stuff right. And what now, life? Like, what now, universe? And then I calmed down a little bit. Really, I would like to just blame the pain meds, but I know it was me. But it's, I'd like to be like, oh, I was just crazy. I was on drugs. But it wasn't just that. But kind of once I stopped taking them because I could function as a real human without them, because I could breathe a little bit better, I started to think back to other setbacks I've had. I have torn my ACL in my knee. So that's a major, for those that don't know, it's a major ligament in your knee. And if you tear that, you either never do a lot of things like run or jump again, or you get knee surgery. So I opted for the surgery route, and I was out that time. I wasn't able to walk for like, well, I wasn't able to use both of my legs to walk. I had to use crutches.
How long ago was that?
It was 2017.
So not really that long.
Not really that long ago. And it took me about a full year to do full recovery. So I was about 6 weeks with my knee immobilized between like right after it happened to after my surgery. And then I had to, you're still immobilized for a little bit after that. And then, I was in physical therapy for a year. So that's in the back of my brain as I'm thinking about after I broke my collarbone and ribs, I was thinking, you know, it's not that bad at least. I didn't need to have surgery. So I started getting back into my practice of breath really from a place of gratitude. So It was a shift from I'm resentful, angry, frustrated. I'd rather punch someone, but I can't because my arm's in a sling.
That's the real reason they put your arm in a sling.
They're like, oh man, she's
they're like,
kill
you know
somebody.
What? She doesn't have to have the sling, but we need her to have it.
But we need her to
we
have
want,
it.
We want,
yeah, I was an angry little thing. And then I really got myself back to this place of, well, it's not as bad as that. Every day I could breathe a little bit better. So that was good. Every day I could kind of get a little bit deeper breath and, but I still couldn't really do the kind of breath work practice that I had been doing.
I'm going to guess that you were probably taking for granted. Before.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I was. And after my knee surgery where I couldn't physically practice yoga the way that I knew how to practice yoga. I couldn't do it because I had one leg essentially. And the other one was just a stick that was attached to me. It was just this thing that was attached to me. It was a dead weight. I was very unhappy. So breath work after that injury was really what helped me feel connected to my practice. And so after this last injury where breath work couldn't even be the thing for a little bit, I was really struggling. I was like, well, that was what I used last time. I can't even use that this time. So I really had to take it kind of deeper. And that's where I came to just gratitude.
Wow. So that's so cool. I mean, I think it's if there's the option to have deep, profound insights without injuries, I always pick that one. But you know what? Sometimes that's not an option.
Yeah. I think that because I am so stubborn, I need to be hurt a bunch, I guess. I don't know.
maybe. But also when you
are injured and recover from the injury, you also provide an example of recovery from injury for others and for yourself, which is helpful. I mean, you know, there's, and if you hadn't had the reaction of being angry and having to be restrained by the medical people who are putting you in a sling, then you wouldn't have the wisdom of that to share. So there's no part of it. It's like, that's the thing. It's like, there's no part of it that isn't a helpful thing to teach yourself and other people as an example.
Yeah. I think if I hadn't been angry and resentful, I wouldn't be me. So I would be concerned if at this point I looked back and I was like, ooh, you weren't even angry. What happened to you? Okay. But I also do see it as there's been a lot of other stuff going on in my life. I'm recently single again, which was a big kind of life altering decision. Mm-hmm. I bought a house. Mm-hmm. I have a new job, and so there's been a lot of things, and I guess life just didn't want me to let those things pass by without really taking stock of what that meant. So this happening to me really gave me the opportunity, even though I didn't really want it, it gave me the opportunity to think about those things and really think about, you know, life.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
That is so cool.
At this point, I can even say I'm grateful that it happened, because I don't think a lot of the other things that happened, like I bought my house after that. I recently adopted a dog after that. My little boy, his name is Agate. He's very cute.
Agate.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that stuff would have happened if I hadn't got hurt and I hadn't.
What was the relationship between getting hurt and the house and the dog?
Yeah. So getting hurt, made me stop a little bit in my tracks. I think I would have just continued to churn. I have a pattern up until this time. I have been in a pattern of, I just get into go mode sometimes and I churn. And sometimes I think I get out of it enough to think, you know, this is what I want. This is where I want to go. This is what I want to do about it. But I don't actually do those things all the time, mm-hmm. in a way that is productive.
Mm-hmm.
And so this getting hurt gave me time to do some of those things. Just take a breath.
Yeah.
Even though I couldn't breathe, figuratively, I was able to take a breath and kind of, not, it wasn't an out of body experience, but I got to kind of sit back, look at what was going on in my life and say, is this.
So Kate, you were saying that you initially, you know, shifted when you had the ACL injury, you shifted to really focusing on breath work. When you had the broken ribs, you had to shift away from the breath work and you ended up in gratitude. So I wanted to know, was there a practice of gratitude, and what can you tell me about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It was initially just a mindset shift. So I think a lot of people, when they think about yoga, they think you have to be, I mean, it's practiced on a mat in a room and then you go. I think sometimes, and then you'll have people that say, you know, and now you can take your, that's one of my yoga teacher voices. And now you can take your practice off the mat with you into the world. But like, nobody knows all the time what that looks like, what the hell does that mean? And so
I did downward dog at the post office. I think that's what it meant.
No, I think that's what it means. No. I mean,
okay.
Why not?
Probably not. Probably they didn't do that. Anyway,
yeah. Go ahead. So I really had to think about what I could do and what would serve me in that time. And so at first it was just a mindset shift. It was just, I would hear some voices in my head say, this sucks. This is the worst. It's not worth it. What are you doing? And I had to start just in my mind making a simple list, and I only made myself come up with three things,
mm-hmm.
just three things I was grateful for. Mm-hmm. It could be shoes on my feet because I'm not barefoot walking. It could be that I had drank a glass of water in the morning. It could be that I remembered to take my medicine. It could be anything, mm-hmm. big or small. It could be that, you know, that I have a cat, my angel. Could be anything. So it started off like that. And then I started writing them down, and I would just write them down. And then it kind of shifted to something a little bit more formal, where I do have an altar set up in my home. So it's kind of a mix between my yoga stuff, my meditation stuff, and then some of my Wicca stuff, because, you know, you're not a good millennial woman if you don't believe in witches and think that you're a witch. So I'm on board with that. That's a totally different thing. But
absolutely.
But
well, I'm glad you brought that up, so I can ask you, since you have a new house, if your ghost followed you.
So no, my great grandma hasn't really been around as much. Yeah. I think that she knew that my time in that space could be short or long, depending on how I made some decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think she was there to really say, you know, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of choices are you making?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want your life to look like? So I think that there was some resonance that she saw in my journey. We've talked about that you think she saw some resonance in her journey and in my journey. And so I think that she was just there at that time. And I know that she's kind of always with me too, but she is less active at letting me know that she's around. Mostly, I think, because I've made better choices now, that she sees that I'm kind of in the place that I need to be.
Nice.
If that makes sense.
That does make sense.
Yeah.
So you have an altar set up in your home, and go ahead.
Yeah. So I have, and it was in my apartment. So I was in my apartment at the time. I also have this altar. And so I would just, when I started to feel like really ungrateful, I would go sit in front of my altar. And sometimes I would think about the things I was grateful for. And sometimes I would just sit with my eyes closed and I couldn't breathe very deeply. But I would just sit with my eyes closed next to my altar and think, just be. And so really the gratitude kind of laid the foundation to kind of just let me be again, because there was a lot that was anger and resentment and frustration, and those things take so much energy for you to maintain. And all of that energy, if you're feeling that way, tends to come from inside of you versus when you're doing kind of energy work or where you're tapped in. But I find that when I'm angry, that's the only thing I'm draining is me.
Yeah.
So
that is absolutely how it works.
Yeah.
That's like, if you don't mind, like me jumping in on
that a little
bit. Please
do. I know.
Because it's the dichotomy that we get into as folks that are trying to, you know, work on ourselves or whatever, mm-hmm. that, you know, anger really is super not helpful, but it is also super not helpful to judge or restrict our expression of what comes up for us. So it becomes a balance. And what people tend to do, at least at some point in their journey, is they go to extremes on both ends, where I'm feeling angry and that I have to, my feelings matter, therefore I have to anger it up all up in your grill.
What? I'm going to punch somebody.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Because, and then they get on the other end of the extreme of like, anger is damaging and not okay, and therefore I'm going to, pretend I don't have it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to act all spiritual.
And then it leaks out later. I've done that one too.
It leaks out all passive aggressive.
Yeah.
Or passive aggressive. And also depression, because, you know, depression is just anger put upon, you know, they direct toward yourself, right?
Yeah.
Because it's much safer.
Well, you're not hurting anyone then.
Yeah, wink, wink.
Yeah, that was a joke.
I know. That, I did a wink, wink. I knew she was joking. That's, you're not hurting anyone else as part of the, you know, so it's the virtue of self-abuse. Mm-hmm. Such a good person because I only beat myself up.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that illusion. And then there's the other part of it really is just because it's safer. Because if you direct it toward yourself, then nobody's going to retaliate.
Yeah. It's all contained.
It's all contained. And so we do that. So that's the thing about anger. And so it's about a balance, which is neither cultivating the anger nor pretending it doesn't exist. Just acknowledging that it is an experience that one is having and let it keep moving. It's like neither judge nor justify, which is the phrase I use in my loving kindness meditation to you, which it has no ads on it. For those of you who want to go back and listen to the loving kindness meditation, I didn't even put any ads on it because it's a helpful one. Loving kindness construct, the metta construct, comes out of a yoga tradition also. A yogic tradition.
Yeah. Metta meditation is also something that has been a part of my practice since I went to teacher training and I got exposed to that. So it's one that I love to practice on my own, and it's one that I love to teach as well. So
what benefit have you experienced from it?
It kind of in the same sense that it gives me a sense of just to be, it really allowed, at first it was one of the only times that I was practicing true self-love where I was really wishing myself positive things. I'm not perfect. I still am dealing with all of the same things, in different ways. But at the time I was not going to therapy. I was not really, I was like, oh, I can just handle all of these things on my own. And so the metta meditation at first, it was another moment where, wow, you just legitimately wished yourself something positive. Amazing. And then being able to also, you know, wish that on other people was really powerful because I could feel directly the effects of wishing that on myself. So it felt not only like a gift for myself, but it was a gift for others, and one that I could not feel selfish doing. And I have come so far in understanding that self-care is not selfishness. And I've come so far in understanding how to take care of myself. But at the time when I first practiced, I had no idea. And so it was just a really nice, it was just a gift. It was just this beautiful thing that I could do.
Yeah. It's a very alien concept.
Yeah.
One of my previous podcasts is actually about that too, which is why happiness matters.
Yeah.
And which kind of addresses that too. It's just like a little meta plugging, not the meta meditation plugging, the other kind of meta plugging myself. But
all kinds of meta here.
Exactly. But it ties back into what we're saying is like that illusion that, you know, it's okay to beat yourself up. Because then you're, quote, not hurting anyone else. But I think one of the cool things about the loving kindness meditation is, I'm kind of piggybacking on what you were saying, or maybe just repeating it, but that you do in the course of doing that meditation get a real somatic awareness of the interrelationship between self-love and the capacity to love anyone else.
Yeah.
How directly correlated they are. And I think that's one aspect of how challenging that meditation is.
Yes. And there are times when I would go to practice it and I would start and I'd have to stop because I wasn't in the place where I could do it at that moment. And so it's always and would I get frustrated about that? Yes. Would I get angry about that?
Would you get in a feedback loop about that?
Would I get in a feedback loop about that? Yes. But I think, those moments are just as powerful for me as the times where I have felt like, wow, this is amazing. Those times where I went to my mat and I couldn't do it were just as important for my evolution as the times where I would go and I would do it. So I think for anyone that's thinking about a meditation practice or wanting a meditation practice or wanting to incorporate that into your life, even trying and not feeling like you succeeded, which I'm putting in air quotes because who defines success in meditation? I don't know. But even just giving it a shot as many times as you need is just as powerful as, you know, someone who has a 2-hour meditation practice every morning.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know people who do that. My old teacher, Mary Kane, but she was in a different stage of life. She didn't have school or work like I did. And so I was always beating myself up like, you didn't practice for 2 hours today. How can you call yourself a yoga teacher? And I was like, what?
Right. And that's the other thing, which I get, right?
Huh.
But that's another aspect of the beauty of being able to engage in something without having it have to be your full-time unpaid job.
Yes.
Right? Is that, again, it helps. It makes you a model for other people so that a practice can meet them where they're at.
Yeah.
I've always, like, if the only way to get benefit from any practice is to have nothing else going on, then the only people who can have a spiritual practice of any kind are the absurdly rich who just so happen to want to have a spiritual practice,
mm-hmm.
or people who, I guess, join a cult. The other choice would be joining a cult.
I guess it's a cult.
Because they'll give you room and board.
Yeah.
As long as you...
You might have to leaflets. Do some other things
there'll
for
There'll be
them.
Leaflets. There might be leaflets. But yes, I mean, do you know what I mean? It's like if you're going to have a real complex 21st century life, then a spiritual practice, the time specifically devoted to it, you know, has to be manageable, I think, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and I think when I think about my yoga journey.
Why do you say it like that?
Because I think I'm thinking to all the times where I've listened to a lot of people talk about yoga.
Mm-hmm.
I've listened to a lot of teachers, and I think every teacher has a different teacher voice. And so that is like the combination of all of the yoga voices. It comes out like that because I'm thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, but when
I hear you, I mean,
yeah,
I get it, but I just thought it was funny. Go ahead.
Yeah. When I think about my yoga journey, every step along the way, whether I'm practicing every day, practicing once a week, practicing once a month, it's meeting me where I am. And all I can do is, use the things that I know how to use. So all I can do is what I can do. That sounds kind of like I am what I am, but it's true. And coming to that place where I really can genuinely say all I can do is what I can do is so freeing, because for a while after I tore my ACL, for example, I thought, well, I'm never going to teach again. That was a legitimate thought in my head. I'm never going to teach again. Why should I ever practice again? Because I can't live it right now.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly, look at me. 2 years later, I'm teaching. Well, not currently, but I am still practicing. I still incorporate yoga into my life every day, whether or not that means I'm doing the downward dog at the bank or not. So,
that's like that sounds like a really good idea for a what do they call it? A flash mob.
That would be a fantastic
yoga
idea.
Yoga at the post office. Yes. Just saying.
Everyone.
You heard it here first.
Tree pose. Let's do it.
Tree pose. They won't know. That won't stand out enough. I think it will definitely have to be something fancier than that. So one thing I want to make sure we don't forget, you have an upcoming
Yes, an upcoming event.
On the 25th, which is coming up. So because it's the 23rd. So if anybody is actually going to be listening to this right away, that would be awesome. But it's on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So talk a little bit about that. It's yoga for the greater good. Mm-hmm. Right. So tell me about that event.
Yeah. So I love Yoga for the Greater Good. It's a donation-based class, and most studios around Boise will do a Yoga for the Greater Good. Their cadence is different. So at the studio that I've taught at in the past and that I'm connected to here in Boise, which is called Yoga for Wellness, they are hosting their Yoga for the Greater Good on the last Sunday of every month. So even if you can't make this one, the last Sunday of every month, 10:30 to 11:30, or maybe it's 10 to 11. Oh my gosh. It's in the morning.
And it's at 1175 East Park Center Boulevard.
Yes. And so
number 102.
Yes. Each month there's a different charity, and it's a donation only class. And so all the donations go to that charity. So this month is actually Jeannie Dillon is the studio owner and a fantastic, fantastic human being, a fantastic teacher. And so this month, all of the proceeds are actually going to her brother's family, who has cancer and has been going through treatment and all of that. And it's really taking a financial toll on their family. So this month, that is the charity, and Jeannie will actually be teaching. So it's a wonderful time to get some exposure to her. She is one of the most amazing teachers I've ever encountered. When I got here to Boise, I went to a lot of different studios, and then I went to a class that Jeannie taught at Yoga for Wellness, and I immediately felt like, oh, well, this is where I'm supposed to be. So
cool.
She's awesome. But we've also done Yoga for the Greater Goods for different organizations, like the International Rescue Committee. I'm trying to think of all of the ones we've done. We've worked with folks at the Veterans Center, and so Veteran Rehab, they're all over the charities that we work with in the Boise area. So it's a fantastic way to not only practice with an amazing teacher, but also you really are practicing yoga for the greater good, because it's going to someone who needs it.
Cool. So that's every month?
Every month, the last Sunday of the month.
The last Sunday of the month. And the website is Yoga for Wellness?
Yes. Yeah, yogaforwellness.com.
Yogaforwellness.com. Mm-hmm. And I'll put links to that in the show notes. So any last bit and I don't want to put you on the spot, which I was just about to do, because that's my MO.
That's fine. I'm ready.
You're ready. We're
ready for it.
Oh. Ready. Boom. Well, you know, certainly anything that you want to make sure that you say, but also I'm wondering if, what would you most like people, your student, like potential students, to know about the way you approach yoga?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What would I like my students to know, my potential students? I would like people, one, to feel like just because they have maybe some preconceptions about what a yoga practice looks like, doesn't mean that that's what it needs to look like. And that's not it's probably not what it looks like, especially if you've never practiced yoga before. I also think that I get a lot of people saying, oh, I can't come to your class because I'm not flexible. That's not true. You don't need to be able to touch your toes to come to one of the classes that I teach. You don't need to be able to put your foot behind your head. I don't even know if I can do that anymore. Really, the kind of style I teach is functional movement focused.
Which means what?
Which means that we're targeting movements that are going to help you in your everyday life.
Okay.
So
so make it easier to carry the groceries in.
Right.
Kind of stuff.
Yes. And we get into so many habits about how we hold our bodies, how mm-hmm. we hold things, how we walk, how we sit. And so really when I teach, I'm thinking about how we can maybe change some of our body positionings for the duration of that class so that when you leave, you can feel a little bit more in tune with your body and a little bit more comfortable in your everyday life. So very much functional movement focus and focus on the breath. So my goal in every class that I teach is to let the teachers who have taught me teach through me. And it's also for everyone to leave with just a little bit more peace, love, light in their lives that they can take. So it's not scary and it's not weird.
So how would you, a lot of people are nervous to go to yoga classes.
I get nervous to go to new teachers that I've never taken classes from before.
Mm-hmm.
I get it.
So what's the best way for them to overcome that? So they'll get there and show up.
I think right now we are living in a time where we have this amazing thing called the internet. And if you're nervous about going to a yoga class for the first time, watch some videos and look up. If you know that it's going to be a specific style of yoga, you can read an article about what that kind of yoga is about, or you can watch a video of a teacher probably teaching some snippet. So you can kind of get acquainted that way. The other way that I have to do it, because we've already talked about it, I'm kind of stubborn. The way that I have to do it, I just have to do it. So even if you're thinking like, oh, I don't know how it's going to go, be patient with yourself. But also if it's something that you want to do, then just do it. It's not scary. And never feel like you have to do what a teacher is telling you to do. Everything a teacher says is always an invitation. Even if they don't explicitly say that, if they get upset at you because you're not doing the thing that they said, then you shouldn't go to that class ever again.
Yeah, that's like, not cool.
So
has that happened to you?
Actually has happened to me. I was at a class. I was at a hot yoga class and I said, what you're doing isn't going to work for me. So I'm going to do this instead. And I got a talking to about how that wasn't allowed.
Was it Bikram?
Yeah. I have a bone to pick with Bikram. So.
Oh, the whole world has some Bikram bones.
Yeah.
There's actually, and I'm not here to slander anybody because I don't even have any dog in the hunt on that. But there's actually a really good podcast documentary on 30 for 30 about, so 30 for 30, I'm plugging your podcast right now. So just saying. But anyway, I plug a lot of things.
Yeah.
On my podcast.
Hey, it's your podcast.
Still waiting for Audible. I talk about Audible a lot.
Oh my gosh.
Because they still haven't like given me a free membership. But
oh.
Hey, Audible. I have several I have several listeners from all. I'm grateful. So So anyway, but yeah, it was an interesting, so with that in mind, a hot yoga can exist without Bikram, apparently.
It can.
That is the spoiler alert.
Bikram doesn't want you to know that, but you can practice yoga in a hot room and get really sweaty without Bikram having to be involved or get a scent from you. So there
just,
you go.
Just if you want.
Just a public service announcement.
Just PSA on that. Cool. All right. Well, so like I said, I'll put the information from Yoga Wellness, and you're listed on there as an instructor at Yoga for Wellness,
yes.
Right?
Yes, I am.
So contact information for you if anybody mm-hmm. wants to contact you about upcoming classes, they'll be able to through that. And thank you so, so, so much for spending
time.
And I learned a lot of stuff too. So
thank
you.
This has been wonderful. Thank you.
Okay.